was, how she was deluded by John Lewis's love.
Hello, you are tuned into another episode of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program each week, I find and feature a theme relating to Appalachian culture, and then I play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. Well, today I'm going to be airing some more oral history stories and featuring some archival audio from the Joseph Sargent Hall collection from the Archives of Appalachia. If you've been tuning in, I have been doing this for the past few months, and featuring these archival audio stories is so fun. It's really interesting to take a look back in time, back in the mid-20th century. And yeah, we're going to dive back in and listen to more of these stories. This collection features Hall's research of language and folklore of the people living in the Great Smoky Mountains in Appalachia in the mid-20th century. So you're going to hear stories from true stories to very fabricated stories to just anything and in between. It's a really, really great collection of archival audio. The stories I have today are a variety of stories once again. I have some more ghostly stories of people seeing some very strange things like mysterious lights, people riding around without a head. That was one that's in today's audio, to what life was like working and living in the mountains, people leaving the area, and you're going to hear a lot about Gatlinburg today, people visiting Gatlinburg in the mid-20th century, and just what life was like back then. So we got some great, great stories lined up for you today, and I'm so excited that you are joining me this hour here on the program. First up, let's get the Delmore Brothers to get things started for us. Blue Railroad Train here from the Delmore Brothers.
Blue Railroad Train, going down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Come back again, let me hear the whistle blow. You're taking the sun and leaving the rain, and I hate to see you go. Leaving me far behind. Give me back the good old days and let me ramble down the line. Blue railroad train, leaving me here alone. You treat me good, you treat me bad, you're making me think of home. I'm longing for company. It's many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's lonely here, waiting for the manifest. I hope the engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Travel these states around. Blue railroad train, a good old pal to me. You take me where I want to go. I'm a transportation's free.
The Delmore Brothers with Blue Railroad Train. That one's been in my head today, so I had to kick off the show and play you that one to get things started. So today here on Mountain Song and Story, again, I'm going to be airing some archival audio of stories from the Joseph Hall Collection from the Archives of Appalachia. If you've taken a listen to this show the past few months, you'll know that I have been featuring some of this archival audio since the beginning of the year, and it's really great. I've been diving into this collection and really taking a listen to some of these audio history stories. There's so much in the collection. It's huge. It spans from 1915 to 2000, and it really focuses on stories collected between 1937 and 1977. So there is a lot in here to unpack. It features a lot of different people. So Joseph Sargent Hall went around, and he was a folklorist, and he collected these stories, like I said, in the mid-20th century, of people living all over the Great Smoky Mountains. And it's just a really fabulous collection, and there's so much to it. So it's really great to be able to work with the Archives of Appalachia. Special thanks again to them for helping me dive into this audio and provide it for you all to take a listen to. So we're going to be doing some more of these shows here in the coming months as well, because there is a lot to this collection, and I just think it's really interesting. So if you like what you hear, please let me know. You can reach me at the Radio Bristol channels. I would love to hear from you. And just a little recap here, like I said, Joseph Sargent Hall was a folklorist, and I've said this in the previous episodes that we've featured this audio, but he was hired by the U.S. National Park Service back in 1937 to capture the speech and culture of the Great Smoky Mountain people, who especially were living in the region or displaced by the coming of the park, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And so, a lot of people that he talked to were living in the region and had to move, and they really saw the entire area change because of the coming of the park. And so it almost represents this kind of loss of this really rural way of life that so many people experienced in Appalachia back in this time period. And I think it's really interesting to get that firsthand perspective of people who were living in this area. A lot of the people that are featured on these clips were born in the 1800s, and they have stories that date back to sometimes 100 years before they were born. So it's really interesting, I think. We're going to go ahead and dive back on in to these clips. So what you're going to hear during today's episode is just a variety of different stories, and I've broken them down and put some music and things in between as kind of a transition, and that'll be the episode. We're not going to have a story segment today or a guest or anything. We're going to go with this format, and we're going to take a listen. So let's go ahead, and we're going to listen to one more song here, and then we're going to get on into that portion of the program. So we're going to take a listen to a Clark Kessinger fiddle tune. Here's Billy in the Low Ground. And keep in mind that Mountain Song and Story is supported by the Archives of Appalachia, which is dedicated to gathering and preserving the written words, images, and sounds that document life in Southern Appalachia. Located on East Tennessee State University's campus, the Archives of Appalachia is open to the public Monday through Friday. Visit etsu.edu/archives to learn more. And special thanks to Ryan Bernard from the Archives of Appalachia for pointing out this amazing collection and assisting me so I can bring you this audio. So yeah, we're gonna go ahead and get into the fiddle tune. Here we go. Thank you.
One time a man come to a feller's house and he asked to stay all night. And the man said, my wife's sick, said I couldn't keep you, he said. But said there's a house down the road there already furnished, and said if you can go down there and stay all night, I guess they'll give it to you. And said he said, well, my wife's kindly nervous, said if you'll let her stay up here, he said, I'll go down there and stay all night. But he said, he went on down there and got him a chair and sat down and went to reading the Bible, and said he heard something coming down out of the loft like chains. And said when he looked, it was a man standing there in front of him. And he said, if you'll look in under that hearth there, he said, there's a lot of money there. He said, they killed me to get my money, but they didn't get it. And he said, they buried me out here in the woods, he said. And right out there, he said, you dig down and you can find my bones. And he said, I've got that one. And he lifted at the rock, and it wouldn't hardly raise up, and said all at once the rock just raised up just pretty, and there laid all that money. And said that he said to the man when he was talking to him, he said, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, what do you want? And said he told him then, he said, if you'll take this to court, you can have this house and all this money. And said, I'll help you out in court. Said, I'll come down there and said, I'll tell them it's what you tell them so. And said he told it, and they all fainted in the courthouse. And the man got the house and money and all. My uncle was a doctor one time, and he had to go lots of times late at night to doctor people. And on the Locust Ridge Mountain, every time he'd start down that mountain, a woman would run out and throw her hands up and said he could just see the bones and in her hands, every bone is in her fingers. And he said that he shot at her one night, said she jumped on the horse and rid down the mountain with him and jump off and disappear, and he wouldn't know where she'd went to. Said one time he took him a gun up on the mountain with him when he went a trip and said he shot at her and said he never could hit her. And said he told the people if they wanted a doctor, they'd just have to call him in daytime or not call him at a night, for he wasn't going to be on that mountain no more at a night, for he is afraid.
My name is Wayne Martin. I went to Rankin School. One time there's a man riding a horse down the road, and there's another man coming up the road. The other man shot that man and shot his head off. They said they could see that man by night riding that horse with his head shot off. And that's all right. Hold up. I'm 15 years old.
What grade are you in?
Sixth grade.
My mother said if you's ever bothered by a witch or thought a witch is a messing around, you'd just sprinkle a little salt across the door or lay the broom down. Said if she see the broom laying across the door, that you could ask her in, but she wouldn't come in over that broom. The whole thing?
My name is Noah Ogre. I was born in 1859. I was born near Gatlinburg. I can remember as far back as 1865. I can remember of seeing the soldiers at the close of the Civil War. There were just three houses in Gatlinburg at that time. One of those houses was occupied by Caleb Ogle, The second room is occupied by Levi Ogle. The third room is occupied by Isaac Ogle. They're all dead now. Some of the folks are in that community yet. Gatlinburg, though, has been a very progressive place, especially for the last, I'd say for the last 30 years. They elected a man over there just a piece about 35 years ago, and he seemed to be a very intelligent man. His name was I.L. Maples. He went to work, and he had a good road built in there, about the first thing he ever done. That opened up the place. People began to visit the place then. And Gatlinburg has been very progressive ever since that time. There's, I imagine, something near 2,000 in inhabitants there now. And they have one of the finest schools there that I know of in East Tennessee anywhere. When I was a schoolboy over there, 65 or 70 years ago, our school buildings there was a log cabin. Our desk that we sat on was a split log with four pegs in it. That is the desk that we used. And we had about 3 months schooling during the year. Now then, they have 10 months of school there every year, during as the year comes. And Gatlinburg is a very progressive place. Now, I don't know how, I couldn't say how far back it was, but something near 200 years ago, there were five Ogle brothers that emigrated there from South Carolina. And four of them stopped there. Isaac Ogle stopped there at Gatlinburg. Tom Ogle stopped at Gatlinburg. And Billy Ogle stopped at Gatlinburg. And Harkness Ogle stopped there. Four of the Ogle brothers stopped there. And they raised considerable families. And at about the same time that they emigrated here from South Carolina, there were a lot of Ogles, emigrated to the state of Illinois. And they've increased until they have what they call Ogle County up there now in the state of Illinois. I met some of them, not very many. I met some of those Ogles from Illinois some 3 or 4 years ago. They are English people. They first originated from England. And they're a dark-complected set of folks, and they have high cheekbones like the Cherokee. My family of Ogles, though, have gotten mixed up with the Irish. That is where we get our red complexion. And now we'll go back to Gatlinburg. I'm going to go back there today to visit, and I hardly ever meet anybody that I know. There's one man living there yet, though, that was a man grown when I was just a little boy. He told me the other day that he was 94 years old, and he gets about as well as a boy 16 years old. Now then, my home is in Emmerich Cove. Emmerich Cove lies east of Gatlinburg, something like 10 miles. Emmerich Cove, when I first knew Emmerich Cove, it was 65 years ago, 1874. There were just six or eight families then in Emmerich Cove, Squire Emmett, the Schultz family, and some of the Parton families, but they're all gone from here now. And up the Greenbrier Cove lies just south of Emmett's Cove. That's a wonderful place. Some of the finest forest timber there that I ever looked at in all my life. And it's a great place to fish and to hunt for game of all sorts. It's a great place to rest and to camp. And I don't know of any place, anywhere that I'd rather spend a few nights out in the woods than I would up in Greenbrier. But a man's under restrictions up there now that the great national parks bought that country out. And when a man goes there, he doesn't have the privileges that he once had when I was a boy. Now there isn't anyone stays in Greenbrier Cove now except a few rangers and a few fire guards. There isn't any citizens that lives there at all now. Now that's about all. Greenbrier was first settled something like 200 years ago, about the time Gatlinburg was settled and about the time Emmert's Cove was settled. But here, some 6 or 8 years ago, the Great National Park began to buy out the land there, and the people are all gone, and the country is being grown up again. It's going to soon be just a natural forest, like it once was before there's ever any improvement made there at all. That's about all I know about it,
Greenbrier. I'd like to tell us a little about the Greenbrier and Newport.
I spied upon that Wild Bill Jones. He's a walking and a talking by my true lover's side. I bid him to leave her alone. He said my age is just 21, too old for to be controlled. I drew my revolver from my side. I destroyed that poor boy's soul. Thank you. longs to be free. But Wild Bill Jones and that long neck bottle, they have been the ruin of me.
Never bought it, we made it right there. We didn't have to buy nothing, only just our coffee. We'd go out to Gatlinburg and buy that. That's all we bought. We had plenty of meat, and then we raised our taters there, raised our beans. We just lived right there at home. We didn't have to buy a thing, only just our clothes.
Now, who had it? Did you buy your clothes?
We made our clothes. My mother wove the cloth on a loom like one of these, right here. She'd weave them, weave the cloth. We had a gang of sheep, they'd shear the sheep, and she'd spin the wool or the thread and make her breeches and her shirts, all. We didn't buy a bit of clothing out of the store.
What did you call a cloth that you were in the store?
Jeans. Jeans cloth, yeah.
What did you call a cloth that you used in the women's store?
They pretty generally used the jeans cloth. They called it plain jeans. Yeah.
Also
use
a cloth called
Yeah. Yeah. Moved down here about 10 years ago.
Why did you have to move down here?
Well, I had to move down here because the park bought us out up there, run us out. We sold out our land to the park.
How did people feel when the land was supposed to be bought by the park?
Well, they felt pretty well when they first got to buying. Before they got done buying, they felt pretty bad about it. They hated it because they left the mountains. All the people pretty generally hated it. And all the people that left the mountains were wanting back. Yes. More than half the people lost all their money.
How was that?
Because they'd go out and they'd buy farms and make a payment on them. And then couldn't reach the next payment. The land would have to go back to the owner.
You are just tuning in. You are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. And on today's episode, we are diving back into and checking out some archival audio from the Archives of Appalachia's Joseph Sargent Hall collection, which features a variety of different clips and audio oral histories of people living in the Great Smoky Mountains in the mid-20th century. And you just heard a clip about a man who was talking about their farm being bought out by those who were putting in the park for the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And at the end of that clip, he talks about how one day it's just all going to be like it was before anyone ever settled here, which is just the woods. And I think that's really interesting. But we've been listening to some of these clips today. I know that one clip in particular was a bit hard to hear, but I just really liked what he said. So we're going to get back on into listening to some more of this archival audio. And coming up next, we've got some more kind of mysterious stories. These are the ones that I really like and I really enjoy, which are more of like the folk tale kind of mystery stories. So the real kind of scary ones, the haint tales. So we've got a few of those now for you that we're going to get on into right after this Ola Bell Reed song, I Believe in the Old Time Way. And then we're going to get back on into this archival audio.
Children of Israel that day. And if you want to have a bright mansion eternal, believe in the old time way.
I believe
in the power that can move a mountain. Believe in the old time way. I believe in the old time singing shout. Believe in the old time. But if you want to have a bright home in heaven, believe in the old time way.
Oh, I believe
in the power that can move a mountain. Believe in the old time way. I believe in the old time singing shout. Believe in the old time way.
One time a man was facing my house and I lived up on Jake's Creek. Started in North Carolina. He missed his way and went the wrong way and got lost. And we hunted for him and inquired at him and never could hear of him. And about 5 years later he passed my house. We found him laying in a sinkhole, back on what they call the middle prong of Little River. And we went out there and took him up, built a jury over him, with 12 men. And he'd got catched in a steel trap, and the jury gave it in. That there's a boy for he'd been killed by somebody and was catched in that steel trap. And they covered him up with what they call hemlock brush. It just left his bones laying there, and we took him up, every bone was to its place but one. We took that man in, had a doctor come to him, put every bone back right to its place, and buried him out there at Gatlinburg. And they thought they know who it was, catch him and took him up. The law took him up, and they couldn't put direct on him, and they just turned him loose.
We dug a new road around by why it come handy for me to gather a mule, to borrow a mule to make a nostril trip. And I stopped not use no bad language, and I bumped my toe and I cut it, a nail off of it, and I grabbed my foot up and I said, God damn, I've ruined my foot. And about the time I said that, there's light sprung up over me, and I looked up at it, and it looked just exactly like a fish, only it was light. And it was dark, rainy, foggy, drizzly night. And when this light sprung, it rushed straight up over me. And when I said that byword, it was right when it flashed up, it just like the bat of your eye. And I looked up at it, and I think I'll turn around and look back towards the house, and it's just about 100. I was just about 100 yards from the house when I saw this light, and it just looked like I could make a hop and a jump back to the house. Well, I looked back, and I think to myself, I'll just look down at the ground and just go on. If it's gonna kill me, it'll kill me anyhow. And it followed me about a mile, like that. And I looked way on the mountain, way beyond the way I was traveling, looking down, trying not to see up to see it. And I see my shadow over there just exact like the sun is shining on me. But when this burst didn't come down, why, the shock of it or something other numb my body till I couldn't walk. Well, I got up in an old field out of the road in case a stock or something come along, and I laid down and I went to sleep. After the light disappeared. When it disappeared in sparks. And the sparks come down all around me and just skewered me up in them. And I went to sleep there, and when I woke up, while the sun is shining, my daddy is expecting me back again at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the sun is shining everywhere when I woke. Made this nostril trip, and but coming back while one of my cousins were there when I got back to Knoxville. Well, she's a big young woman and awful scary, apparently. I was telling her what I'd seen. My daddy was out, and I thought by him being out that I'd just flip this over on mother about using the byword. And I told her what I'd said and what I saw, and Lord, she just drawed up, and she says, Lord, tiny, she says, if we'd see something else like that, or that's happened to us, what would we do? I says, you just do like I did. You just die, or run, or fall, or do something else. She says, I'd just die away. Well, just as she says, I'd just die away, while I looked on the mountain at this mineral hill, graveyard hill, I saw one coming, but it wasn't as big as the one I'd saw by a good deal. And Maud, she just spread out in the yard. Her chair just kicked over. And
Mother grabbed her. Well, I made a grab for an old bucket or two there where I thought I'd saw it before it got dark. And I missed all those buckets, and I just grabbed my hat, and I just got a hat full of mud and water, and I just pitched on her, and we finally got her in and got her on the bed. And just as we started up the steps with Maud, why, this here light that I saw coming fell right in the yard and bursted right where we were sitting.
My name is Amos Reagan. I was born in Sevier County, Tennessee, at Gatlinburg, up on the mountain where Uncle Tom Campbell lived when he died. I've been a logger all my life up to the last little better than six years. About 6 years ago, June the 2nd, 1933, I joined the CCCs. I worked as a leader up to second day of November, 1933, and I was transferred into the Park Service. Went to cutting timber. Had a great deal of trouble with the CCC boys cutting timber, as they didn't know anything about cutting timber. Later on, we went to Cove Mountain, built the Laurel Falls Trail, and we had several rock on that trail, nothing to drill those rock with, only just to steel and 8-pound striking hammers, and I want you to know it was a very difficult job training those boys to drive steel with handles, switch handles. We use switch hammer handles in this park here that when you lay them across your shoulder, the hammer falls down on your back. But we got along pretty well and went to shooting those rocks off and blew them off down in the hollows. Had a great deal of trouble in and picking up the broken rocks and hiding them, so on. We got the Laurel Falls Trail done while we built a tower, a lookout tower up on top of the mountain. We got it complete and come back off the main camp. Later on, we went to the Newfound Gap, built a trail from Newfound Gap to LeConte. We didn't have quite so much trouble with the rock on that trail for the reason it was soft. Slate rock, but it's a very hard place to work, high up on the mountain, cold weather, lots of rain up there. Boys, they want to come in every weekend, two or three of them get sick during the week. It's a very hard job fooling with these CCC boys when you get some of them that you can't get much work out of, you have a right smart trouble training them up. One thing or another. The most difficult trail I've ever built since I've been in the Park Service was the Trillium Gap Trail. Went up on this Trillium Gap Trail in the year 1935. Worked all summer on it. Went back again in 1937 and worked another 6 months. And then in 1939, I went back up there in June. Complete the trail, got the trail done, but there was rock bluffs up there that's 18 and 20 feet high. Put those boys up on top of the rocks, have time with ropes, make scaffolds, use those switch hammers. Tell you it's pretty dangerous, but we had good luck with the trail, didn't get anybody hurt. When we got the rocks shot down, picked them all up, hid them, covered them up, mossed lots of them over. Had lots of big walls to build. When we got the trail done then, we come back over the trail and hid all the brush and logs and things that we had along in sight. We moved out of up there now. We're back down in Greenbrier to side camp, doing trail maintenance, other kind of work. I've been with the CCCs now a little better than 6 years. like to stay on with them as long as I live. I'm not having much trouble with boys now. I have a very good bunch of boys. The boys is getting trained, know how to do things. Might tell you a little fairy tale, too, before I quit. While we was up at Trillium Gap last summer, we had a bear came to the camp several times while we was up there, the biggest bear I ever seen in my life. One of the boys, one night, he took a notion to run, jump down off the log and scare the bear to death. And when he jumped, why, his feet flew out from under him in some tin cans and one thing or another. And he got on those cans and rolled right in under the bear, and he scared the bear nearly to death, and like scared him to death, too. We had lots of fun about the bear. Well, I'll see you all later. Come back again, that's all.
Ain't Gonna Rain No More, Hoyt Ming and the Pep Steppers. All right, folks, so that is the show today. We just wrapped up some more archival audio from the Archives of Appalachia, featuring some audio stories from the Joseph Sargent Hall collection. And yeah, we're going to get back in and do some more of these stories again next month, so please stay tuned. I really like the scary, spooky stories, so I'm going to dig around and try to find some more to bring you next month. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here, each and every single week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past shows if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program blog page on over at listenradiobristol.org. As always, I'll have the songs and materials and today's playlist up there as well, so go check it out if you want to learn more about today's show. Special thanks again to the Archives of Appalachia for helping me and assistance for today's show. Thanks again to Ryan Bernard over at the Archives as well. Folks, once again, my name is Toni Doman. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stick around because Digging with Big Lon is coming up next, and I will catch you right here next week. One more song to take you out on, the Everly Brothers. Bye bye, love.
Bye bye, love. Bye bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I think I'm gonna. Bye bye, love. Bye bye, sweet caress. Hello, emptiness. I feel like I could die. Bye bye, my love. Goodbye. There goes my baby with someone new. She sure looks happy. I sure am blue. She was my baby.
feel like I could die. Bye-bye, my love, goodbye. I'm through with romance. I'm through with love. I'm through with counting the stars above. And here's the reason that I'm so free. My loving baby is through with me. Bye-bye, my love, goodbye. Bye-bye, my love.